877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO. Make that donation right now. $5 a month, $60 to get his DVD of The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, the new edition. Coming up next, it's Fight the Empire with Per Fogering.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of A Night with Heather Booth on Saturday, September 28th at 5 p.m. at the Mount Hood Community College Theater in Gresham. Heather Booth is an organizer and activist for progressive politics. A Night with Heather Booth features a screening of the documentary film Heather Booth Changing the World, a Q&A with Heather after the film, and a panel discussion with local organizers from a broad cross-section of community groups. Again, that's A Night with Heather Booth on Saturday, September 28th at 5 p.m. at the Mount Hood Community College Theater at Northeast 29th and Kane Drive in Gresham. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Gravy Cafe, located in both Boise at 3957 North Mississippi Avenue, and in Kearns at 3101 Northeast Sandy Boulevard. Serving traditional American breakfast and brunch, both locations are open daily from 7:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Lunch was provided by Horse Brass Pub, located at 4534 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland. Open from 11 to 2 a.m., serving British and pub grub. More information at horsebrass.com. Dinner was provided by Crush Bar, located at 1400 Southeast Morrison Street in Portland. Crush is an all-inclusive event space, bar, and restaurant, open till midnight or later. More information at crushbar.com. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm/give right now.
This is KBOO Portland. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Seattle Theater Group, presenting English indie rocker and former frontman for The Smiths, Morrissey, with special guest Interpol, live at Moda Center's Theater of the Clouds on September 30th. Tickets are available at Ticketmaster.com.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fogering, and the show is Fight the Empire. And very pleased to have our guest today, historian Jeremy Kuzmarov, and he's got a book out called Obama's Unending Wars, subtitled Fronting the Front Foreign Policy of the Permanent Warfare State. Well, Jeremy, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, since this is the unending wars, when did these wars start? What's the beginning of this kind of permanent warfare state?
Well, I think in American history, I think there's only been about maybe 15 or 20 years where the United States was not at war. So probably from the beginning of American history. But I guess we could also date it to the War on Terror and the unlimited warfare that was declared after 9/11. With only one dissenting voice was Barbara Lee in California, representative from California in Congress. But basically the authorization after 9/11 allowed for this unending war that's gone on for the last 18 years.
Well, in your book, you go back to Woodrow Wilson, who is still, I guess for most people, he's a very, very revered figure in American history.
Yeah, I think it should be quite the opposite if you look into his record. I mean, he, you know, some of the things, for instance, he did in Latin America were truly horrible, like invading Haiti and Nicaragua. But I think, yeah, Wilson was, his brilliance was his ability to package war as some kind of humanitarian endeavor. And he skillfully, you know, played up the evil of Germany and promoted this idea of humanitarian intervention, which that's the comparison I draw with Barack Obama, because I think Obama was very Wilsonian in his ability to package wars quite effectively as humanitarian endeavors.
Well, Wilson was also pretty much a racist, which I wouldn't say that about Obama, but maybe some of the people around. How does that play in?
Because my book does address like Obama's policy in Africa, and it was very paternalistic. I mean, obviously he's not an overt racist, but there is this kind of mentality, maybe it's more of a colonial mentality, that the United States, the great power, has to save the Africans from themselves, and that they can't regulate their own affairs. So I think that is very paternalistic and kind of colonial mentality, because in reality, the United States is often facilitating conflicts or supporting dictatorial governments that cause violence and conflicts, like in Africa, the Rwandan and the Ugandan governments. But it's framed that we have to save them, and we're the only ones that could save them. So there's this underlying paternalism, and some of his speeches, really reflected a very paternalistic approach, and he's kind of lecturing the Africans you have to get your own house in order, and the West is not responsible for your problems. But in reality, I mean, there is a legacy of colonialism, and again, a lot of American policies were exacerbating or causing problems. He wasn't admitting that. I think that's a parallel we can draw, that paternalistic mindset.
Well, yeah, I read a very interesting thing a few years ago, and it was based, it was a report called Honest Accounts, Honest Reckoning, with a question mark at the end, and it kind of listed all the money going into Africa and all the money going out. And this included, foreign aid and all kinds of investments and everything else. And it turned out that every year Africa was losing about, $57 million, a whole lot of money. Just the normal, proper way of doing business in this world.
Exactly. I mean, the United States and other foreign countries are exploiting the economic resources of Africa, but they don't want to admit to that. And then they want Africans, they claim to want Africans to take accountability, but they don't want to openly acknowledge how the West is continuing to exploit Africa and to support some of the worst regimes who enable that foreign plunder of their resources. And then they give speeches, like Obama gives speeches saying, we're not responsible for your economic problems, and you have to take accountability.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that really blew my mind, I know it's not in your book, but it really kind of found it very interesting, is that what the West Africa, the former French colonies, still require their the African countries to use the French banking system.
Yeah, I think we see form of neocolonialism, and the United States was like allying with France and various interventions. I think that was a basis for the war in Libya. Gaddafi was trying to forge greater independence, even independent currency, and that's one reason that the West took him out, basically.
Well, why don't we talk about what Obama did in Africa? He's like he said, he doubled the funding for AFRICOM, which is the our military thing going on there. I mean, I guess we have military bases in just about every country in Africa.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, and perhaps only an African American could get away with it without criticism. That's the kind of genius of having Obama as the kind of figurehead of U.S. foreign policy, is that people are so happy to have a black as a president because of the history of racism in the country that they don't want to question what he's doing. and he's actually advancing the American empire in a far greater way than his predecessor. And it's really effectively recolonizing the continent. And many of the governments are so weak that they can't resist having those bases. And, you know, it's the war in Uganda. Like, for instance, Obama sent special forces to fight this warlord in Uganda, Joseph Kony. But, you know, Kony had been operating for over a decade or two. And actually, he was based in Central Africa Republic. He wasn't even in Uganda. But they sent special forces to Uganda. And really, it was just to consolidate and justify expanding military bases in the region of Central Africa, which is very rich in mineral resources. And it was, you know, beefing up the military of Yoweri Museveni, who's a longstanding dictator of Uganda, who was involved in the invasion and plunder of Congo with Paul Kagame of Rwanda, who's another favorite of Obama as well as Bush. Obama's really, yeah, militarizing the continent and supporting some vicious dictatorships, all under the guise of human rights.
I think is this be a time to take a little pledge break, and when we get back, I'd like to talk some more about Paul Kagame. Sure. I think this is an untold story, and but right now, I think we're going to go out to our membership people.
Good morning. Okay. Hey, Pear. This is John Shuck. You're listening to KBOO, and this is our fall membership drive. KBOO is funded by our listeners. That's you. If you're listening to the radio right now, it's funded by you. And we're asking you to go to the phone right now and dial 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. Or go online at kboo.fm and become a member. I volunteer here at KBOO and excited to Fight the Empire is one of my favorite programs on KBOO with Pear, who has been a long time warrior for fighting for truth and justice and democracy and against the American Empire and all its militarism. And you're hearing this important information right now. And if this kind of programming is important to you, and it's got to be for us, please be a part of this movement. 877-500-5266. I do want to thank Nina, who's renewing from Beaverton. Rock on, Nina. Thank you for your donation to KBOO. And this is our fall membership drive. And so right now, let's step it up. Let's do this thing. 877-500-5266 is the phone number. That's 877-500-KBOO. Pear Fagerang speaking with Jeremy Kuzmarov. A couple of his books, The Russians Are Coming Again, The First Cold War is Tragedy, The Second is Farce, talking about Obama's unending wars. Remember, it doesn't matter who's in the White House, does it? The war keeps on going. And so we have to be able to speak out and say, no, we don't want this. And that's what KBOO is a part. It provides the voice, provides the platform for a diverse number of voices, including Pear Fagerang and his show Fight the Empire that you're listening to right now. And your support of KBOO right now while this show is on signals that this is important and we want to keep this going. Please give us a call, will you? 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO. Let's go back to Pear.
Okay, we're here with historian Jeremy Kuzmarov, and we're talking about his most recent book, Obama's Unending Wars. Let's talk about Paul Kagame. In this, you know, in the mainstream media, he's regarded as some kind of a clean guy, a forward thinker and all that, sort of a good guy among all these ruthless people in Africa. But I think the reality is a little bit different.
I think so, yeah. He was celebrated in some circles as the Abraham Lincoln of Africa and the man who stopped genocide. But a lot of information has come to light that points to his culpability in large-scale massacres and war crimes, including, you know, setting up methods for incinerating the bodies of victims that harks back to the Nazis. And he invaded the Congo in the late 1990s, and his militias are still rampaging in Congo. And actually, Rwanda has basically imposed for many years a puppet leader in Congo, Hippolyte Kanembe, who's allowed for the plundering of that country. And Obama just continued the past U.S. government policy of protecting Kagame from any prosecution. I think his administration made sure to block, because Kagame has been implicated in the assassination of Rwandan president Juvenal Habyarimana, the Hutu leader, because Kagame represents the Tutsi, and he had invaded. He triggered the violence in Rwanda in 1990 when his forces invaded Rwanda from exile in Uganda, because the Hutu were controlling Rwanda at that time, and he wanted the Tutsi to control the country. So a lot of evidence has come to light that he was involved in shooting down the Hutu president's plane in 1994, which triggered the mass killings. And now the family of the dead president had tried to sue him in court, but the Obama administration blocked that lawsuit. And that just exemplifies his policy of supporting Kagame, even though he's killed huge numbers of people in Rwanda and is responsible for the invasion of the Congo and massive killing there and looting. It's probably the world's worst humanitarian disaster, but it's received very little publicity. And the complicity of the United States in arming the Rwandan regime has just gone, unnoticed in the media.
Well, didn't Kagame get some military training at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas?
That's right. He was America's boy. In fact, an FBI agent who was part of the UN investigation into the plane crash that killed the Hutu president found in his research that Kagame was a fair-haired boy of the CIA and British intelligence. That's his term, this FBI agent. So from the beginning, Kagame was supported by the CIA and British intelligence, because the Hutu had been supported by France. So it's like the new great game was playing out, and the U.S. and U.K. wanted the Tutsi in power because they wanted a base in Central Africa to access the wealth of Congo, and France was backing the Hutu.
Well, my understanding is that, before these countries became when they were still colonies, that the Tutsis had a very privileged role under the German colonialists, and then later under the Belgians.
Yeah, that's accurate. And then they were expelled. After Rwanda got its independence, the Hutu asserted themselves, and there was a Hutu power revolution. And the first two major leaders of the country were Hutu, Frederick Kayibanda and Juvenal Habyarimana. But the Tutsis sought to reclaim their power, and Kagame was the leader of a guerrilla group, the Rwandan Patriotic Front, that invaded the country to try and reclaim their former dominant status and basically resubordinate the Hutu, which they achieved.
One thing, there were massacres kind of on both sides, which doesn't really get reported. And then Kagame's Rwandan Patriotic Front went on to conquer the country. And then, like you said, they moved into Congo, where they got involved in mining all these rare minerals. It's really kind of unnerving to think that all our wonderful electronic devices use rare minerals that are mined from in Africa by what's virtually slave labor.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's Rwandan militias that some have been indicted by the International Criminal Court, certain proxies of Rwanda, but Kagame has remained immune from prosecution, and he even treated like a celebrity here. Like this past year, he was given free tickets to one of the NBA final games, and he came with his entourage. And
oh, really?
A celebrity. Yeah. And he's like friends with Hollywood people, and his sons are taken to baseball games by Hollywood actors, such as Ben Affleck. And meanwhile, this guy set up methods for incinerating bodies using acid and outdoor crematoria. And he's a serial killer. He's hunted down opponents of his regime in exile and carried out like gangland style killings. And he's invaded Congo several times. He's taken out several heads of state. And he just apparently is a ruthless leader and serial killer. And the U.S. has supported him for many, many years now. And Obama is just continuing that pattern. So, you know, and it's very hollow. I mean, he was, you know, in his speeches, he would attack Zimbabwe and Robert Mugabe, but the violence that Mugabe is linked to is much, much less than Kagame and Museveni. I mean, those are the worst leaders, I think, in Africa. They've killed and probably well into the millions between the two of them, and they've just devastated the Congo and their invasion. But, you know, you never hear a bad word about them because the U.S. has been bankrolling those regimes. But Zimbabwe defied the West when Mugabe, you know, supported the takeover of the white's land by the black and was, you know, Marxist-Leninist from the beginning of his career. So demonized in the media. But the worst leaders in Africa are treated like celebrities.
Let's talk about briefly before we go on our next break. Let's talk briefly about one of the best leaders, and that would be Thomas Sankara of
Burkina Faso.
Burkina Faso, right? Land of the upright people, I think it translates to. He was a leader there for about 4 years, and then he was assassinated by a person, a U.S.-backed man named Blaise Compaoré. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, Thomas Sankara was like the Che Guevara of Africa. He's following very progressive policies. He was a Pan-Africanist. I think some of his heroes were people like Patrice Lumumba, who was Congo's first president, who had wanted to nationalize a lot of Congo's resources and try and, you know, unify Africa, along with Kwame Nkrumah, who was the great independent post-independence leader in Ghana, who promoted a Pan-African vision of unifying the African continent and promoting socialist ideals of greater human social equality and using, you know, control over natural resources to develop the continent. But unfortunately, as you pointed out, Sankara was overthrown by Blaise Compaoré, who ran Burkina Faso for the next 20, 25 years. Sankara was killed in 1987. And when Obama took office, Compaoré, the killer of Sankara, was still in power. And Obama courted him because the U.S. was trying to build, expand drone bases in West Africa. So, the U.S., forged good relations and gave a lot of money to Compaoré, and Obama was even photographed, you know, shaking his hand and being all kind and nice to him. And then, you know, it's another example. Again, they're, you know, demonizing Robert Mugabe, but Obama was aligned with some of the worst leaders on the continent, and you know, there was a deeper strategic motive. In this case, I think the United States wanted to expand the drone network and AFRICOM, and so they didn't care that Compaoré is a ruthless dictator who killed the hope of Africa.
Okay, I think we're going to go out on another membership break. And when we get back, I'd like to talk some, get on to a discussion of Libya. So stay tuned, folks. This is Fight the Empire. My guest is Jeremy Kuzmarov, author of Obama's Unending Wars. But right now, we need to hear a little bit from Membership Central.
Thanks, Per. You're listening to KBOO. It is our fall membership drive. KBOO was funded by our listeners, and we're asking you to go to the phone right now and call 877-500-5266, 877-500-KBOO, or go to KBOO.fm to become a member. I'm John Shuck, and I'm really honored to be pitching for really a living legend at KBOO, Per Fagerang. Per brings all kinds of alternative and important voices and regarding to fight our empire. And in fact, his guest today, Jeremy Kuzmarov, is the author of a book that we have as a gift for those who give a donation. The book is called Obama's Unending Wars. It provides the first comprehensive critical history of the foreign policy of America's 44th president, the Drone King, who ordered the bombing of seven Muslim countries, backtracked on a pledge to reduce America's nuclear arsenal and help fuel a new Cold War with Russia. And that book is available for you if you call right now with a donation of $60. The book, again, Obama's Unending Wars, Jeremy Kuzmarov, $60. Give us a call right now at 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO. Jeremy has generously donated this book to KBOO listeners for our membership drive. And so right now is the time to get advantage of that because this program, Fight the Empire, is about just that. The news that we get from many other sources, particularly our mainstream sources, they're all paid. You know, we all know that. They are corporate-owned by the military, industrial, finance, media, intelligence complex, and we need to fight that. And that's what PAIR has been doing here for decades. And that's what you are doing when you participate and contribute to KBOO and bring an alternative voice. We need them desperately. Obama's Unending Wars is the name of the book. Get the truth about all of this stuff. Jeremy Kuzmarov is the author, and he's donated copies to us for $60. A $60 donation will get you a copy of that book if you call right now, 877-500-5266. Let's go back to PAIR.
Okay, well, let's get into Libya. You know, I mean, Libya started out to be this wonderful crusade kind of in the the idea was we were protecting the Libyans from this crazy Gaddafi, but it sure turned out badly, didn't it?
Yeah, well, firstly, I think the media presentation of Gaddafi was completely biased. I mean, Gaddafi does have a dark side, but he's also done a lot of positive things for his country and was well-respected throughout Africa. I mean, when he came to power in 1969, you know, the country had been ruled by basically a Western puppet regime under the Senussi King Idris that had sold off Libya's oil resources for nothing and was a highly corrupt dictatorship. So Gaddafi came in and took national control over Libya's oil industry and used the revenues to finance a very good education system. Libyans, in fact, were able to study abroad. The government would pay them. And he financed a very good public health system. The economy was very strong. A lot of people throughout Africa came to Libya to work. And he also developed an amazing water system to access water through the desert. So there were a lot of positive things going on in Libya, and there were also forms of direct participation in government. Gaddafi had kind of stepped aside and was functioning more as a kind of figurehead behind the scenes. So, but, you know, our media just demonized him, made him, he was a reincarnation of Saddam Hussein, didn't attempt at any kind of nuance or balance or attempt to spotlight some of the very positive things that had occurred under his reign and how he had really transformed the country in his years in power. And that demonization just continued during the war, which destroyed Libya. It turned the country from the number one economy in Africa to a failed state and destroyed much of its infrastructure and empowered Islamic jihadists. And from the beginning, you know, the uprising was depicted as this great pro-democracy movement, but it started in Benghazi, which is a headquarter for Al-Qaeda and for Islamic forces that Gaddafi had long battled. Like in other Arab countries, you know, there was Gaddafi was a secularist, and there were Islamic elements that he had long opposed. I mean, sometimes his methods may have been excessively harsh towards those Islamic elements, but to make like the uprising was just this, you know, Western liberals pro-democracy was completely misleading. It was these Islamic elements. And, you know, he was blamed for incidents that have never been proven. Like there was an alleged massacre he committed at the Abu Salim prison where Muslim insurgents were being held in the 1990s, but investigation hadn't really corroborated. Firstly, Gaddafi was not necessarily, there were some prisoners who were killed under circumstances that are still not entirely clear, but it was exaggerated. The numbers that are killed were not sure, like there was never an authoritative investigation. So it's more a rumor that there, you know, this massacre. I mean, probably there was some kind of massacre that occurred, but it's not clear that A, Gaddafi had ordered it, and B, the facts are not entirely clear as to the numbers that were killed. And there was an investigation after, you know, Gaddafi was overthrown, and they thought they had uncovered a mass grave, but but it was only animal bones. So, I mean, how could you wage a war based on an event that's unconfirmed, and you don't even know if Gaddafi was the one who ordered the killing of prisoners after a prisoner uprising? So the whole thing was just, it was based on lies and deception. It was admitted later, even by the State Department, that they had exaggerated the number of protesters that Gaddafi had killed by at least 10 times. There had been stories spread that Gaddafi was giving his soldiers Viagra to commit rape, and that was false. So, everything we saw, like with the Iraq War, the lies and deception was there with Libya, and a very one-sided portrait of Gaddafi. And the United States ended up aligning more with jihadist elements that were trying to overthrow Gaddafi. So when Gaddafi was overthrown, the country was thrown into chaos, and the Islamic forces became dominant in the country. And now it's just chaos, and the CIA has been supporting this warlord named Khalifa al-Haftar, who had been a dissident against Gaddafi after he led the ill-fated invasion of Chad in the 80s. And he had actually been accused of using chemical weapons in Chad. He's from the beginning a very brutal figure, and he's employed all kinds of sadistic methods as he's tried to gain control of the country. So it's just a complete disaster, and it's a sad story.
It's also the origin for a lot of the migrants from Africa who are coming to Europe.
Exactly. It caused a real humanitarian catastrophe. And sadly, many liberals were supporting this war. Like the book goes into, like in the internal debate in the Obama administration, the most hawkish people were these liberal women, such as supposedly liberal. They're not real liberals. Hillary Clinton, Samantha Power, and some other women in the State Department were the ones the most gung-ho about, oh, we have to save the Libyans from the genocide of Gaddafi. But that genocide never happened and was never going to happen. Actually, it was Robert Gates, who's far from a humanitarian. I mean, he was implicated in the Iran-Contra crisis and supported a lot of wars, but he had some rationality, and he was trying to stop the intervention, but he got outvoted by these supposed liberal humanitarians in the Obama administration. And I think they really knew very little about Libya and its internal dynamic, which was just completely disruptive. Then there was a huge mistake that was made, just like in Iraq. One of the major mistakes was to block any members of the Ba'ath Party from rejoining the government, the de-Ba'athification policy. And the U.S. learned nothing from history, because they did the exact same thing. Anybody who was part of Gaddafi's party was blocked from rejoining the post-Gaddafi government, and that deprived the government of some qualified personnel to rebuild the country. And it also created a ripe group of insurgents among pro-Gaddafi elements who they tried to hunt down after Gaddafi was overthrown. So the whole thing was completely mismanaged, and I think ill-conceived from the beginning. But sadly, most liberals were supporting it.
I guess who can forget Hillary Clinton's gleeful cackle when she heard about violent end of Gaddafi. But that's
exactly, and the way he was presented, like I quote in the book, like numerous officials, the way they referred to him, they would refer to him as like a mad dog and a beat, Like, you wouldn't refer to any Western leader or anybody in this way. He was just portrayed in a subhuman way, and that could justify this, barbaric activity. And then just, gleeing when he was essentially lynched, and Clinton was gleeful that a man was lynched who was very well respected among his own people. And it's just uncivilized behavior by Clinton and others around her.
Mm-hmm. I think now we're going to go out to membership desk, and when we come back, I think we really kind of go into the new Cold War with Russia. But first, let's talk to John Chuck.
Good morning. Thanks, Pear. You're listening to KBOO, and it's our fall membership drive. KBOO is funded by you, and we're asking you to go to the phone right now and dial 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm and become a member. I'm John Shuck. I volunteer here at KBOO, and I'm very excited to be with Per Fogering pitching his show, Fight the Empire, that has been fighting the empire for a long, long time. His guest today is Jeremy Kuzmarov, who has just written a book called Obama's Unending Wars, Blowing the Progressive Camouflage off the Obama Presidency, and it is available to you. He's offered copies of this book as a gift to those who contribute $60 or more right now on the phone or online, 877-500-5266, 877-500-KBOO or KBOO.FM. The book provides the first comprehensive critical history of the foreign policy of America's 44th president, the Drone King, who ordered the bombing of seven Muslim countries, backtracked on a pledge to reduce America's nuclear arsenal and help fuel a new Cold War with Russia. We recognize that no matter who we get in the White House, they need to be watched closely and criticized. And because at the end of the day, we are a war empire, and we need to fight that empire. And Per has been doing that with his voice and his guests for a long, long time. And you, as listeners and supporters of Per, need to step up right now if you haven't. Increase your pledge, renew if you haven't done so, or if you're new to the area, now is a good time to recognize, to make sure you keep KBOO on your speed dial, listening as well as phoning, 877-500-5266. There's the phone call. That's what we like to hear. KBOO.FM online. Call now. We'll give you this book as a gift, Obama's Unending War, by Jeremy Kuzmarov, for a gift of $60. That's only $5 a month. $5 a month, $60 gets you this book by Jeremy Kuzmarov, Obama's Unending Wars. I want to get right back to Jeremy and Per right now, but one more time, I'm going to give you that phone number, 877-500-5266.
Okay, we're back with Jeremy Kuzmarov, and this time we're going to talk about the new Cold War with Russia. You know, which is, in a way, right right now our news is full of this whole business with Biden and son in Ukraine and who blew the whistle on who and all that. There's a big, when I left home this morning, there was a hearing on the whole thing that was taken over, that took over NPR's broadcasting. So how did all this begin, the whole Cold War with Russia and this business with Ukraine?
Well, the business with Ukraine began in February of 2014, or a bit earlier, when the United States was supporting the Maidan protests, which was, again, kind of like Libya, you know, is presented as this great pro-democracy uprising, in the case of Ukraine, against a pro-Russian leader. But, you know, the pro-Russian leader, Yanukovych, he was corrupt, but he had been elected. And it wasn't really a great democracy uprising. There were a far right wing and even neo-Nazi elements within those demonstrations against the pro-Russian regime. And many of them were worshiping Stephen Bandera, who was a Ukrainian nationalist who had collaborated with the Nazis. And actually, they didn't have enough signatures for impeachment. There was a drive to impeach Yanukovych, but there had been an election scheduled for the next year, and they didn't require enough signatures for impeachment. So they basically drove Yanukovych out of the country, and they carried out black flag attacks where they attacked civilians and tried to blame it on Yanukovych and his forces to discredit him. And he was driven out of the country in a blatant coup d'etat. And that triggered the war in eastern Ukraine, because two eastern Ukrainian provinces then wanted their autonomy from the new Ukrainian regime that the United States was supporting. And its leader, Petro Poroshenko, was pro-West and wanted to ally Ukraine more with the West and gradually maybe join NATO. But the eastern part of the country is more tied to Russia and its economy and didn't want that. So they voted for autonomy, and a war erupted. The Ukrainian military was sent in to try and subdue their rebels, and Russia ended up supporting the Donetsk People's Army and the rebellion in the east. And many atrocities were carried out by the Ukrainian military, and the Obama administration provided a lot of military aid and training. And yeah, Biden, you know, directly, the Biden family directly profited from the coup, because 3 months after the coup, his son Hunter Biden was appointed as I believe it was an executive or on the, I think, no, rather the board of directors of Burisma, a major oil and gas company. And then there's this issue of whether Biden was trying to block the prosecution of this guy Zlochevsky, who is one of the oligarchs, who is a founder or main director of that firm, Burisma. But Hunter Biden had no experience in the oil and gas industry and stood to make a fortune. So it's a clear case of war profiteering by the Biden family. Whatever Trump may have done, the fact remains that this is a blatant form of war profiteering by the Biden family.
Well,
and
I think Hunter Biden was getting $50,000 a month for serving and on the board.
Exactly. It was all because of his family name and the influence he could bring. It was not because of any expertise in that line of business.
Well, and we might also mention that this gas company, Burisma, has its gas holdings in the eastern part of Ukraine. I sort of did a little research, and, you know, over the centuries, Ukraine's borders have been all over the place. It's, well, actually, Ukraine means borderland itself, and it was always part of some larger empire. It was part of the Russian Empire. It was part of a Lithuanian-Polish empire at one time. And it finally got some borders under the Bolsheviks in 1922. And then these borders, the Ukrainian people are really only about half of the nation. You have Russian-speaking people in eastern Ukraine. And after this coup in 1914, there was talk among the new rulers that there would only be one official language, Ukrainian, that Russian would no longer have any status as an official language. And this really alarmed the people there, and they started rebelling.
Yeah, and I mean, their economy was very much tied with Russia. Yeah, and this language law was... Exactly, very vital. And, you know, from Russia's point of view, Russia, you know, was very uncomfortable with this right-wing, you know, neo-Nazi, because the Poroshenko government, you know, numbers of the cabinet officials that were appointed by Poroshenko, the post-coup government, had connections to far right-wing movements and even neo-Nazi ideology. So, you know, Russia had been invaded by the Nazis in World War II and devastated by the Nazis. So, obviously, Russia is going to be alarmed, and the people of eastern Ukraine and the Crimea are going to be alarmed by what's going on. So it's very natural, their behavior, but that's never explained in our media. It just demonizes Russia and presents this kind of Cold War type narrative.
Tell us a bit about Crimea. You know, we keep hearing in the mainstream media that that the Russians kind of invaded Crimea.
Well, Crimea is also, you know, historically very important to Russia, and historically was connected to Russia. It was only transferred to Ukraine in the 1950s, and the Crimean population are mostly ethnic Russians, and they were alarmed by the coup d'etat, and so they voted in a referendum, you know, that occurred in February of 2014. So, and Russia, you know, has a major naval base there, so I think Russia was alarmed that there was a threat to their naval base, so they supported this referendum. But the Crimean people did vote to rejoin Russia. Even independent observers, although there weren't that many prevalent to witness the referendum, but there were some, and they estimated that between 50-60% voted. The official number was like 90%, but the independent observers who were looking very critically still asserted that the majority, above 50%, had voted to rejoin Russia. But Russia was accused of invading Crimea, but there are very few Russian military forces apart from those that were already prevalent at its naval base and the military base. And polls have shown that Crimeans are very happy to be part of Russia again, because they've been part now for the last 5 years, because Russia has invested a lot in Crimea's economic development, and they built a bridge to Crimea that's expedited trade. And I've talked to some people from that region. They say that the people are overwhelmingly would rather be part of Russia for economic reasons, largely, and also because the Ukrainian government has been a complete mess, especially since the coup of 2014.
Well, what's happening now? We have a new president in Ukraine who seems to be making some kind of peace with the people in eastern Ukraine. We could talk. I think now we maybe should go for one more pledge break, and then we'll come back and talk some more about Ukraine and what is going on right now in the news.
Sure. Good morning. You're listening to KBOO. It is our fall membership drive, and KBOO is made possible by our listeners. And we are asking you, our listeners, to go to the phone right now and dial 877-500-5266, 877-500-KBOO, or go to KBOO.FM and become a member. I'm John Shuck, and I am very excited to be participating with Pear in our fun drive here. Pear Fogering has been hosting Fight the Empire probably since the Empire was born.
10 years.
And bringing guests like Jeremy Kuzmarov to provide alternative points of view, not only to the mainstream media, but sometimes to the alternative media itself. And Jeremy Kuzmarov is with us, and he's been very generous in offering copies of his book to listeners as a gift if you contribute, $60. $60 for the year, $5 a month. You'll get a copy of his book called Obama's Unending Wars. Obama's Unending Wars, Blowing the Progressive Camouflage off the Obama presidency. You've been hearing about that right now in this interview with Pear. And want to thank Mary of Portland, who took advantage of this and just called in to renew. Thank you, Mary. Nice work. And we want to ring that bell for you when you give us a call right now at 877-500-5266. Or you can do it online as well, kboo.fm. And for a gift of $5 a month or $60, a copy of this book by Jeremy Kuzmarov, Pear's guest, Obama's Unending Wars, Blowing the Progressive Camouflage Off the Obama Presidency, is yours. We're going to go back to Pear and to Jeremy to continue this important discussion about the American empire and its wars around the world and what we can do to wake up.
Okay. You know, right now, the Ukraine and this Cold War with Russia are very much in the news. They sort of underlie a lot of developments that are going on. Do you have any insight into what is happening behind the scenes?
Well, and firstly, it should be noted that the war was kind of ignored by everybody, including the leftist media, for years. You know, this war has gone on since the coup, and there are 13,000 civilians that were killed in eastern Ukraine, and an estimated 1 million people who were displaced. So it was a terrible humanitarian crisis, and the Ukrainian military committed a lot of atrocities, including torture, and there's been no outcry, including among the, you know, human rights and leftist community here in the United States. I think because of this Russophobia, because Russia is blamed often for, you know, for starting the war, but really it was started because of the U.S. support for the coup d'etat in February of 2014. So, and this, I think, gets lost, you know, now all this hysteria about what Trump may have, with his whistleblower, and if Trump was trying to prod the Ukrainian president, but, you know, and withhold aid. I mean, it probably would be a good thing if the aid was withheld, because U.S. aid is sustaining and helping the Ukrainian military as it assaults eastern Ukraine. So it's actually a good thing if he was withholding aid. I mean, it may have been for a bad reason, but and it is possible that the war may be coming to an end because Ukrainians were so fed up with their government after the coup, that Poroshenko, Petro Poroshenko, who took office after the coup, was a chocolatier and a billionaire who was incredibly corrupt and was hated by the Ukrainian people. So they voted him out of office and voted in a comedian who had mocked the system. And he has promoted rhetoric of change and has vowed to hopefully end the war. And there was a meeting recently, and I think there a talk scheduled for in the next week or two, where hopefully a peace settlement could be reached. And both parties have to abide by the Minsk Accords, which had earlier been agreed to, which would give some autonomy to the eastern Ukrainian people. But it's not clear as of yet that Ukraine's President Zelensky, this comedian, will abrogate this language law that you mentioned, which is obviously something the eastern Ukrainians don't want. So to really end the war, he has to renounce that language law. And hopefully he will do so, but I don't know for sure that he will, because he did receive a lot of the support from a warlord named Ihor Kolomoisky, who was funding some of the militias that were rampaging in the eastern Ukraine and has business investments in that region. So I don't know if he's so sincere about ending the war.
Well, you know, the Ukraine war is sort of part of the of this new Cold War. You could say it began back around 1990 when the Soviet Union fell apart and the U.S. We promised Gorbachev that if they allowed Germany to be reunited, that NATO would not move beyond the German borders. And well, we very quickly broke that promise. And then when Boris Yeltsin became the president of Russia, you might say the looting began. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, I think you're right on the mark that the United States had made a promise. And I think Gorbachev was too naive about the West and who America was. He thought Russia could be partners with the United States, and they reached this agreement. And the United States promised that it won't expand NATO. Yeah, and Gorbachev agreed to the reunification of Germany on its own terms. But the U.S. by the late 90s had violated the pledge and started to expand NATO into Eastern Europe. And Yeltsin emerged as the Russian leader and was, I think, is widely perceived in Russia as a patsy of the United States and the West, who just kind of sold out Russian interests, because he agreed to that expansion of NATO and he agreed to the radical restructuring and privatization of Russia's economy, which resulted in basically a lot of the nationalized industry being sold off very cheaply to a small number of oligarchs, and some were Russians as well as some foreign entities that were able to cash in on this massive privatization. And some of it was orchestrated by Harvard University advisors who were corrupt, and that they initiated their own investments in the country, and they used their positions to get rich in the country and evaded paying their taxes. Russia, very few people realize that. The Russian economy suffered in the latter phase of the communist years, and there were a lot of shortages and problems, but the economy just completely collapsed under Yeltsin and under the kind of hyper-capitalism that the United States and the Harvard boys were promoting. And then Putin came in and succeeded Yeltsin and actually stabilized Russia's economy and imposed much more control on foreign investment and took charge of the Russian banks and took back many of the major industries, which were renationalized, and also took measures to prevent capital flight. So Putin's a very popular figure in Russia because he has salvaged their economy, and the economy is doing a lot better under Putin than it did under Yeltsin. I mean, Russia still has problems, but the country has come a long way from the Yeltsin period. And, he's a more proud leader who will, stand up to the United States. Although initially Putin had wanted to forge good relations with the United States, and he was supporting the United States after 9/11, but relations slowly broke down. And it was the Obama administration imposed sanctions in late 2012 for no reason, really, except from lobbying from some of these business interests that who had been kicked out by Putin and were held to account for illegal practices like tax evasion. So they undertook a lobby campaign that led the Obama administration to initiate sanctions, and then Obama intervened in Ukraine, and that set off this new Cold War, a new arms race that's developing.
Well, one of the big concerns I have is that you know, Donald Trump is such a, I don't know how to describe him. That guy is really kind of unhinged. And, you know, it looks like he may get impeached. And the charge that's brought up most often is relates to messing around in Ukraine. If it was up to me, I would impeach Trump for dumping the nuclear agreement with Iran. You can see the disasters that that led to, and also dumping the Paris climate agreement. But nobody talks about those two things. Everybody's focused on Ukraine. And my concern is that when and if Trump gets impeached, that whoever takes over will kind of resume the Cold War with Russia. That's this Ukraine accusation kind of dovetails with a kind of a new crusade against Russia, and I kind of wonder where they will go with this.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think the greatest scandal is Trump's contempt for the environment and his selling off public lands and his denial of climate change and refusal to cooperate with the United Nations on this issue. I mean, that is just the worst, among other things, yeah, including pulling out of the INF treaty, which was a terrible thing that he did, the Nuclear Forces Treaty that banned certain kinds of mid-range weapons. But yeah, I think you have to question the motives of the people that they're trying to impeach him on this issue. And, you know, when they bring up the Ukraine, they don't want to address the violence of the Ukrainian war. And they're making like it's the worst thing that he pulled foreign aid to the country, when that's actually a good thing, because that aid was sustaining a terrible war in eastern Ukraine that caused 13,000 deaths of civilians and over a million displaced. And these supposed humane Democrats are not showing any compassion for those deaths and people suffering, and don't want to bring up the war. They claim the war is justified. And a lot of those people, like Adam Schiff, who are leading the impeachment proceedings, are Russophobic and could take us into a nuclear war potentially.
I think so. I think I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it at that. We've been talking with Jeremy Kuzmarov, historian, author of The Obama's Unending Wars. I want to thank you very much for being with us. It's been very enlightening, and I recommend this book. It's got a great overview. We just covered a few of the things that are in this book, but for people who want to get acquainted with what's going on, it's a good overview, and it's got a lot of footnotes where you can go to for further education. So, Jeremy Kuzmarov, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's my pleasure, and it was a great conversation.
Okay, this has been Fight the Empire, and I think now we're going to go to John Chuck out there at the membership desk. How are we doing?
We are doing really well. I want to thank Judy from Portland for renewing. Yay, Judy. Judy has been a long time and generous supporter, and what she did is she called up and increased her gift just a little bit, her monthly gift. It's a wonderful thing to do. You can do this online. You can just have it come right out of your bank account, a gift of so many dollars per month to go and help KBOO at 877-500-5266 is the number to call to make a pledge right now. And this interview was so incredible, Pear, that I went and made a one-time gift and purchased, got this book myself. The book is called Obama's Unending Wars, Blowing the Progressive Camouflage of the Obama Presidency. Jeremy Kuzmarov just interviewed with Pear. What a great program. And I thought, I'm going to get this book. So I gave a $60 donation. And I don't know if that's appropriate to say all that, but I did anyway. And so you sold me, Pear.
It's a good book. It's a wonderful book for getting a good overview of the kind of warmongering been going on for the last, I don't know how many years. You know, Obama fits in with it. He didn't originate it. He kind of continued it, you know, with a new kind of put a new face on it. But it's been going on for a long time, and it's got a good overview. And you can read the book, and then if you want to delve in a different specific areas, there are a lot more books to read. There's footnotes that you can pursue, you know, for more knowledge on all this. It's a wonderful book.
Yeah, and Jeremy was very generous in offering copies of that, donating copies of that to KBOO. So you can get a copy of that book, Obama's Unending Wars by Jeremy Kuzmarov, by calling 877-500-5266 or KBOO.FM, going online, and for a gift of $5 a month or $60, you can have that book. And please give us a call, 877-500-5266. That number again is 877-500-KBOO. And we're going to have Flashpoints coming up next.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Gravy Cafe, located in both Boise at 3957 North Mississippi Avenue and in Kearns at 3101 Northeast Sandy Boulevard. Serving traditional American breakfast and brunch, both locations are open daily from 7:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Lunch was provided by Horse Brass Pub, located at 4534 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland. Open from 11 to 2 a.m., serving British and pub grub. More information at horsebrass.com. Dinner was provided by Crush Bar, located at 1400 Southeast Morrison Street in Portland. Crush is an all-inclusive event space, bar, and restaurant, open till midnight or later. More information at crushbar.com. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm/give right now.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 10 o'clock. Coming up after this next message is Flashpoints.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 14th annual Dancing in the Square American Indian Day Powwow on Friday, September 27th from noon to 7 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square in Portland. Dancing in the Square American Indian Day Powwow is a traditional showcase and celebration of the rich cultures of Native American, American Indian, Alaska Native communities throughout the Northwest and beyond. The event features vendors, educational booths, food, entertainment, and more. Again, that's the 14th annual Dancing in the Square American Indian Day Powwow on Friday, September 27th from noon to 7 p.m. With grand entry at 3:30 p.m., the powwow will be at Pioneer Courthouse Square, 701 Southwest 6th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.